Media Masters with Paul Blanchard.
Welcome to Media Masters, a series of one-to-one interviews with people at the top of the media game. Today I'm joined by Rachel Jupp, editor of BBC Panorama. Rachel joined Channel 4 News as producer in 2005 and became its head of home news 7 years later. In 2013, she moved to the BBC as deputy editor of Newsnight, overseeing a number of high-profile stories, including the investigation into Kids Company. Appointed editor of Panorama in 2016, she was the second woman given the role in the show's 66-year history. And in her time running the programme, Rachel has overseen a diverse array of stories, including Harvey Weinstein, Grenfell and Putin's Russia. Rachel, thank you for joining me.
Great to be here.
So, Rachel, Panorama is such a famous current affairs brand. It must be exciting to take the programme forward into this new era.
Yeah, it's an incredibly exciting programme to work on. You have an enormous amount of editorial freedom, and you have a brief, I suppose, on that programme to think about the biggest and the most ambitious stories in journalism that you want to tackle, and the freedom to do so. I am so aware of the 65 years worth of history that sits behind our programme. And, you know, that it's about, for me, sort of maintaining the legacy. And for me, the legacy is about trust, really, and, you know, finding out the truth in the stories that have been really important for all of those 65 years. I genuinely believe Panorama is a really important institution for this country.
I think it is.
It holds power to account. And takes on the really difficult subjects. But in the future, it's also, for me, about thinking about how we use some of those values that have always sat at the heart of Panorama, most importantly, the truth and the integrity of the programme, and thinking about how they work for now. And some of that is about looking at different types of stories, what are the investigations that we can do that are relevant to young people, and some of it is about kind of working out what Panorama means outside of just BBC One, which is digital or iPlayer. So there's kind of really exciting things happening, I think, on the programme, both in terms of the stories that we tackle and how we get the programme to resonate with a younger generation.
Do you feel quite a sense of heavy responsibility, in a sense, given its history, given the power of it? It's one of the most important mainstream investigative journalism brands.
Yeah. And when somebody, when I got the job, actually, one of my friends said to me, it's a bit like an office of state. And
yeah, don't cock it up.
It does feel a bit like that. It is a big responsibility. And you know, it's easy to just put out a programme each week. The challenge is to do really difficult, really ambitious journalism and still always get it right. You see what I mean? So that's the challenge of Panorama, I think, is to keep growing, to keep challenging yourself, keep doing more difficult subjects and tackle difficult things. So I take that responsibility really seriously. When you sit in this, the sort of editor's chair, one of the things I didn't realise before I got the job is programmes at Panorama often have what I call a really long tail. So there are court cases that are going on about programmes that were done, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. And, you know, so the impact a programme can make can last for a really, really long time and way beyond just who watches it that week. You know, we recently had a serious case review on a undercover that we'd done in their G4S Young Offenders Institute. And
I remember the programme well.
Yeah, and that was 11, you know, that was only last week that 11 agencies were found to have made serious failings. So you kind of manage all of that as well as just the programme. And I also get like an enormous amount, it sounds ridiculous, but I get an enormous amount of archive requests. And it's like, can we use this? Can we use that? And you realise that actually Panorama is, it's not quite the first version of history because we don't tend to do things really, really quickly. But it often is telling a very important part of our country's history, I think.
And without any disrespect to, say, the Graham Norton show, which I love as well, it's an entertainment programme, but, you know, you're dealing with people that don't want to be featured. So you've got all of the safety of your undercover, you know, all of that tension, dealing with lawyers, the pressure to get it right. Whereas, I say, on Graham Norton, even though it's a very enjoyable show, it is effectively a Hollywood celebrity coming in and doing something they want to do, talking about their latest film. There must be an inherent tension and stress in what you're doing to get it right.
Yeah. As I say, the reputation is really important, and the Legally, these things can be really, really fraught. When I used to work at Channel 4 News or at Newsnight, you'd phone up and say, do you want to come on the programme? People would think about it. Now, when you're at Panorama and you phone and say, we're making a panorama about you, people react rather differently, I think it'd be fair to say.
I think if you were going to make a panorama programme with me, I'd just absolutely, I think, wow.
Yeah, but I suppose, I mean, the first thing I'd say is I've got a really brilliant team, and particularly around undercover. I have a really, really fantastic colleagues who handle the most difficult investigations, and they do it with the most extraordinary professionalism. And that will sometimes go all the way through to court cases. So obviously it's the team that makes the programmes, really. We have a lot of support from our lawyers. Yeah, I mean, it's very important for Panorama to get it right.
And yet you're in, well, they would say, intruding into the lives of lawbreakers, bullies, nasty people, violent people. There must be an inherent stressful situation there.
I think investigative journalism is, by its nature, difficult. And that can mean different things for different stories. And genuinely, there isn't an easy panorama. Either you're trying to do something very, very quickly, but you're always trying to add something that's different from the news, or you're doing something which, a sort of social affairs, for example, that involves access, but you've got enormous duty of care issues there. Or you're trying to do, you know, a very ambitious investigation. And there is, you know, lawyers now are used a lot, I think, to try and sort of challenge the programme. Yeah. And then at the sort of, you know, further spectrum, when you're dealing with criminals, there are safety issues as well. You know, I think the climate for investigative journalism is getting more difficult, actually, for all of those reasons. But that's why I think Panorama is so important, because, and sitting within the BBC as we do is so important, you know, genuinely impartial and independent. And it means that we can pursue those stories without fear or favour. But for the teams involved, you know, managing that stress is an important part of what we do.
And how do you do that? I mean, what are the techniques?
I think talking about it within the team, I think we learn a lot from each other. We try and encourage a system where people can learn from each other's mistakes. And, you know, there are occasionally sort of missteps, because you're often taking on a subject for the first time. You know, when you're making a programme, you can spend weeks just developing it to get to the point that you decide to make it. Then weeks making it, and then weeks dealing with it afterwards. So I think sort of wherever possible, working collaboratively is an important part of that. And also the nature of the programme is we balance different types of programmes over a year. So you try and space your really biggest and most ambitious investigations out and have different types of programmes in between, and you think a lot about the teams that are working on each programme and how you can get them a good range of stories over the course of a year.
And obviously I wouldn't expect you to breach any confidences or anything that's confidential, of course. But how do you get the inspiration for programmes? How does it come to you? Do you have people that come to you saying, you should look into this, this funeral parlour's clearly robbing from graves, and you think, right, we'll look into that. But obviously you don't know whether that person's a vexatious person who's making it up. Or do you walk around the supermarket and you look at brands and you think, I think they're up to no good. How does it actually work in terms of the inspiration for individual programmes?
So sometimes people will write into Panorama or give us a call with an idea for a story, and we'll start that conversation. It's very important for us, obviously, to always maintain really high editorial standards, but that could be the beginning of that process.
It plants the seed of some wrongdoing, potentially.
Yeah, exactly. We don't have kind of in-house reporters anymore on Panorama, but I do get a lot of pitches from freelance reporters or from reporters who work across BBC News, who will say, you know what, I covered this story yesterday and I really think there's something more in it. You know, if you could let me go and find out. And that, you know, often that works. A lot of stuff comes from, you know, stuff that's being news, that's being stories that are being covered elsewhere. And I just think, actually, there's more to that than just a 3-minute news piece. There's something bigger going on. And Or sometimes I feel that there's an interesting story that's not being covered by the news because it doesn't quite fit the something happened today and so we're going to tell you about it. So, for example, we recently did a programme about takeaways because I think that the takeaway market has just totally changed. And it's a really, really interesting example of how technology has changed, you know, like something we all do every day, eat our dinner. But nobody had really looked into it because it's not the kind of thing that's naturally covered by the news, even though it reflects how we live our lives. So we did an investigation into some of the biggest players in the takeaway market. But that's not the sort of story you'd normally see. So some of it is about trying to sort of predict trends and think about where society is moving to as well.
But it's also going somewhere to fulfil the BBC's remit about distinctiveness because you can do investigative pieces to newspaper ownership and all of these great and important things that need to be looked into. But on the other hand, normal, regular viewers eat takeaways and they're going to be more interested in that because it's more relevant to their day-to-day lives.
Yeah, and I think that being on BBC One is something I think a lot about for Panorama because we want to tackle big mainstream subjects. You know, we really need to be part of the kind of national conversation on BBC One. So you want to take stories that are relevant to people's lives. And some of that is also about how you tell stories. And sometimes you can, you know, tap people on the shoulder and say, this is a story you really should know about. But often you want to also reflect people's own experiences and say, we're going to have a look into that. We're going to do some journalism. We're going to tell you something you didn't know about that subject. And we're going to tell you in a way that's really engaging, I hope. So there's a kind of, you know, we're on nearly every week of the year. So within that, there's always going to be a mix of investigation, social affairs, consumer, international current affairs as well. And I hope that across that, the year and across the range of programmes, it gives, there's a sort of bit of a pick and mix, something for everybody, but it also tells a kind of national story, I suppose.
And investigative journalism, by its very nature, is investigative. If you get the kind of sniff of some potential wrongdoing, how often do you look into it and then you think, well, actually, there isn't any wrongdoing? You know, what is the kind of, you know, if you have 10 ideas for a programme, how many of them come to air overall?
Probably about one.
Wow.
Somewhere between none and one.
Right. So that,
well, I would say.
Is that high? That's probably a high success rate rather than a failure rate, isn't it?
I don't know.
And what are the reasons then? Again, without going into any specific details.
Well, the most important question you always have to ask is it true? And you have to look at that and interrogate whatever the story is for a whole number of ways. And you have to be really careful not to bring any kind of biases you have to a story and not leap to, well, that sounds right, doesn't it? Because, you know, there's a really high evidential bar and we are always measured about against the law in that way. And that's absolutely right that we are. So on an investigation, you look at lots of different sides. But then there are other stories that you just think that's a great story. So or an important story to tell and to tell properly. So, for example, we did a programme towards the end of last year about the poisonings in Salisbury. And we had that commissioned by BBC One because they commission our hour-long programmes, which we make a number of through the course of the year. And we recognised it immediately as a story which was going to have ramifications and there was definitely areas that we could work on and more that could emerge. And I think those sorts of programmes where you are telling a really difficult but important story, but with it there will be news that you are, you know, showing the audience for the first time or interviews or footage is a really important way of presenting journalism, I suppose.
Do you have any kind of memorable programmes that you've made recently? I mean, I remember some incredible episodes, like the one about the contaminated blood scandal and the faulty medical implants exposés. Do you have any kind of favourite stories over your tenure?
So the programmes that you invest the most time in are the big investigations.
Your favourite's probably the wrong word, isn't it? It's most memorable, most impactful, I suppose,
yeah.
On you personally.
I mean, I think... Yeah, success can mean different things in Panorama, but...
Oh, that's a great question. What does success mean then? Please carry on.
Some of it is obviously about, you know, the audience that are watching it. Some of it is about how big the story is that you break and how much sort of impact that has. Some of it is about the kind of audience that you're reaching.
Exposing wrongdoing.
Exposing
wrongdoing. Holding wrongdoers to account.
Yeah, exactly.
I love it when you kind of, you have a programme and there's clearly a set of wrong-uns.
Yeah.
And then you've got them banged to rights at the end. It's great. And you think, well, they can't get out of that. Plus, they've said it on air, so that it's obviously been lawyered. So it's obviously true. That's what I think as a viewer. I think if they've said it, it's almost certainly true. I bet my life on it.
So I suppose I think there's four programmes that stand out, I suppose. I think we do, all our programmes are really good, genuinely, I think that. And but in terms of our sort of biggest stories, one was about undercover in an immigration detention centre called Brooke House.
I remember watching it. It was horrendous. And
yeah.
In a good way, you know, in an impactful way.
I was on maternity leave when that actually went out, and the brilliant team behind it did an amazing job. But as a taking you into a place you would never otherwise see and holding power to account in the most sort of stark and clearest way.
It was just hidden camera footage.
Yeah, hidden camera footage. This is what it really looks like. And it really was really, really shocking.
It didn't need any narration.
And had a huge impact. And, you know, it's very difficult to pull those things off.
You watched it as the viewer and think, how can we treat other human beings this way?
Mm.
I mean, it was that profound.
Yeah. So I'm very incredibly proud of the team that worked on that. The Paradise Papers, very different type of investigation. And also one of those subjects about how do you, you know, which isn't an easy sell for the audience, actually. Do you know how many businesses are offshore and aren't paying tax anymore in this country? And do you know what impact that has on our public services? As a question,
yeah.
You know.
Frontline workers having to pay more tax, for one.
So it's a really, really difficult story to get over the line.
Because again,
a really
even with the might of the BBC's lawyers, by virtue of the fact they're in the Paradise Papers, they can afford bigger lawyers than you've got.
Yeah, but we've got fantastic lawyers who I'm lucky enough to spend a lot of time with. And very, very different sort of tonally, but a programme that we did last year called Murder on the Streets, which was a sort of a story about a young boy, Raheem Barton, who was killed in South London last summer. And we were privileged enough to be allowed to follow his friends and his family and spend some time with them in the wake of his murder. And it was just, you know, obviously one boy's story, but I think tells a bigger national picture. And I think there's a really important role for Panorama there, just looking at some subjects in depth rather than everything having to be sort of, you know, quick Twitter-style news. And then the last one, which again is really different, but last year we broadcast a Panorama that was made in 1979 about Jeremy Thorpe. And as a sort of example of a fantastic panorama where power was held to account on a programme that could never be broadcast before, I just thought it was a great example of how relevant the sort of legacy of the programme is.
Do you have a formula or a kind of ratio in mind of a whole year's worth of panoramas in terms of what you might cover? We had Steve Crabtree in the chair last year, and he's the BBC's editor of Horizon, your science strand. And he said, roughly, I would want, you know, a quarter of the year to be about physics and science. The rest of it might be about health and then something to do with space. And, you know, he knows what a year's of programmes will look like overall, and he wants to make sure that nothing falls through the cracks. Do you have that in terms of, like, one might be social affairs, one might be politics, you know, you have to touch Brexit, one might be a mad axeman on the loose that the police haven't caught?
There's a balance there, because you do, it's always, when you're doing a weekly programme, there needs to be some planning, I think it's fair to say, and there's a certain number that you need to plan ahead. But you also need to stay really relevant and sort of reactive, and you want to tell the stories that matter to people's lives, and you never quite know what they're going to be. But so, and you are dealing with very different types of programmes. So we had a programme about Brexit with Adrian Charles, and we made that in 3 weeks.
I watched that. Was it shot in his flat? It seemed to be...
Some of it.
I thought it was.
Some of it.
It seemed quite an authentic flat, actually, rather than a recreation of one. That was one of the things visually that I remember from the programme.
Mm. So that's actually a very sort of quick program to make. And there are other stories, like Grenfell. We did a week after Grenfell, we made a program. Others take years. That's not an exaggeration. They can take years. So you have to get the sort of balance of that. There's some quite practical things in there as well. But broadly, about, you know, a quarter of our programs are social affairs. About a quarter should be consumery. They should mainly all be about this country, I think. We sort of tend to have 4 or 5 foreign films over the course of a year. And, you know, you can't do investigations every week, but I have a rule that if anybody brings me a good story, I'll always try and do it, because ultimately that's what we're there for. We're there for journalism when we're there to break stories.
One of the amazing things about the BBC's journalism and its commitment to truth is whenever the BBC itself is under fire and is the, you know, coming under trouble from various things, I'm thinking of Hutton and all of these, I trust the BBC's coverage of its own problems more than actually other broadcasters. How does it work in terms of, I know Panorama's had to cover some tricky issues within the BBC. How do you manage the Chinese walls? Are you currently investigating Tony Hall? Is my real question.
I never comment on ongoing investigations. I suppose my sort of starting point is that Panorama needs to investigate without fear and favour, right?
And I mean, that's incredible as well, isn't it?
Yeah,
that even your own bosses, if they need investigation, will be investigated.
Yeah, and you know, there's a recognition that is at the heart, I suppose, of Panorama's integrity. And if we didn't do that, then there would be some really important questions about the programme, I think. So you sometimes have to tackle difficult subjects. And actually, I did do a programme last year about the gender pay gap at the BBC. And in terms of Chinese walls, it was actually really straightforward. I didn't find it that bit of it difficult. I talked to my bosses in Current Affairs, and that was it. And the corporate bit of the BBC dealt with the response to our programme. So it actually was, I think there's a recognition across the BBC that we will investigate the BBC occasionally, and it's an important part of the programme.
I had Torrin Douglas on many years ago. He was then the BBC's media correspondent. He said that when he was covering BBC issues, he would just go straight to the BBC press office, just like any other press office.
Yeah.
And sometimes he'd get fobbed off.
Yeah, yeah. You put in a right to reply, as you would put in a right to reply to anybody else that you're investigating, and see what the response is that you get back.
Other than managing the kind of day-to-day programme flow, where do you want to take the programme more generally in the medium to long term? What will Panorama look like, say, 4 or 5 years from now?
Well, I try to approach that in a similar way to how I approach the subject about what should we be doing next week and next year. So I think broadly, you want to make a programme that is relevant to people's lives and has at its heart investigative skills, investigative journalism, and telling people new things. Now, I've already talked about, we've done a programme about takeaways, we've got a programme about social media influencers, we did a programme last year about addicted to my smartphone. We're living through a moment where technology is changing our lives, and there are some parts of regulation that are struggling to keep up with that. And I think that's emerged over the last sort of 2 or 3 years as quite a strong theme. And so I hope that we will always continue to recognise that our society is changing, the way we live our lives is changing, and Panorama will stay relevant to that. But beyond that, I suppose it's always about taking on the biggest targets, identifying the stories that I think really matter to our audience, and finding out the truth about them. And how we deliver that programme, I suppose, and that journalism to people is changing already. We've got a much, you know, we live outside of our 8:30 BBC One slot. We've got a really big social media presence. We're on iPlayer. We're on YouTube. So I think taking our journalism and our material to where our audiences go is really important. But I think the sort of values that have been central to Panorama for the last 65 years will continue to be relevant, because we're holding power to account. And I hope that we are always finding out truth about the stories that matter to people, if those stories will change over time, I'm sure. But as long as Panorama is sort of reactive and responsive, then I think it will stay relevant.
Because the values stay the same.
Because the values stay the same, exactly. And I think that there's, you know, there's the sort of the shift to how we're all consuming TV differently and watching things online. There's still a lot of value in I'm going to tell you the truth. I'm going to tell you what really happened with this story or that story, or I'm going to tell you something you've never heard before and it's going to blow your mind. The storytelling might change.
It's quite a thrilling form of journalism, actually.
It's really exciting, and it's a real privilege to just be able to focus on those areas.
Do you have like a procedure where if something huge happens, like Grenfell, where you go to the BBC One control and say, "I need you to clear an hour of the schedule on Wednesday to run this kind of big ad hoc programme." How does that work? Or do they come to you and say, you need to do something on Grenfell and you've got 3 days to put a programme together?
We've got a brilliant relationship with BBC One, and they're really supportive of Panorama. And I think BBC One wants to be and is a channel that is reactive and reflects what's happening in the country. So there was always an expectation that if there is a very big news event, the Manchester terror attacks, the Westminster terror attacks, the Grant fire at Grenfell, also the general election, that was all within a short period of time, we would be in a position to cover them and provide the audiences with more depth than they're just getting from the news. And we know that people really come and watch those programmes. They're really engaged with, and they really want more information about whatever important news event is happening. So it tends to be a conversation, but they're always open to ideas and discussion around the stories that we think matter, and scheduling and slots as part of that conversation.
I mean, clearly the scheduler's commitment to Panorama now feels secure, but there was a period of time where it was bouncing around the schedules quite a bit. Was that a period where it was kind of unloved by BBC management, or that's how it felt as a viewer?
I feel that Panorama's got a important place on BBC One now. And we have a really great slot on Monday night. So my experience of that, I suppose, has been Panorama sits somewhere between news and current affairs and television. And it's a kind of an interesting space. But my experience of that has always been that the work that we have done has been supported and promoted by news and by BBC One.
And investigative journalism, by its very nature, is going to be a hard slog. It's going to be expensive. You know, given that, I'm paraphrasing W1A here, but the kind of more for less type thing, it is something that, you know, could suffer under future cuts.
Yes. The hit rate that we were talking about before is indicative of the fact that you will probably end up having a lot more misses than hits on investigations. And you never know at the beginning of one where it's going to end and if it's going to even end in a programme. And it can be difficult to juggle that, which is why we make different types of programmes, not just big investigations. I think that Panorama's had to keep up with the way that the industry's changed, and I think we work really efficiently within that. So, you know, we use, you know, producers that can shoot more now. And there's lots of different changes we've made to make sure that we're a really efficient programme. But we still will always prioritise the big stories and the most ambitious investigations, because that's what we're there for. That's our job at the end of the day.
Is there something that a viewer would see that's changed in Panorama that's been a result of you taking on the editorship? For example, for me as a viewer, there seems to be a more diverse range of on-screen reporters that I would say that's one of your personal achievements as editor.
One of my priorities when I came to Panorama was to bring a new range of reporters and presenters. I think that reporters are a really important part of the programme, actually, helping tell the story of the journalism. So, for example, we've used Tuna Dehealy to do the Takeaways programme. We've used Ben Zand. We've used Catherine Nye. But, of course, it's also important to work with the reporters who've been associated with Panorama for a longer time, like John Sweeney and Jane Corbin. So I'd say that's one part of it. I'd say I think I have slightly shifted the subject matter a bit. Having a background in news, I think, means I'm really motivated by wanting to generate news stories and feeling like we're telling the audience something new wherever we can is an important part of the programme to me.
Do you think of how the programme's going to go out visually when you're in the kind of concept stage of planning an episode, as it were? Are there certain subjects that are just physically difficult to put to air in terms of television because they might be predominantly text-based and hundreds of documents? Is there something where, you know, is that where you have to get the creativity flowing, is just how to get it to a television screen?
Yes, I think that storytelling in journalism is really difficult, if I'm honest. And when you get something like the Paradise Papers and you have a huge data dump, the first stage is always stand behind the journalism. And then how are we going to put this together and tell this story is a real challenge. And I think that as documentaries have got better and better, and as there's more competition for people's time, as we know, that challenge is kind of come into sharp relief for current affairs, I would say. And I think we are rising to the challenge of that. And sometimes that's about finding really great characters and using them to help you tell a story. And sometimes it's about feeling like you're really on that journey with that journalist. But each programme brings its own challenges, I suppose. I would never not do a story because it's difficult television.
You agree to do it in your mind, you decide to do it, and then you think, right, now we're doing it, how do we visualise it?
Yeah, I mean, usually the two processes go alongside each other, but you can't sort of set the bar at, we can't do that really important piece of journalism because I'm not sure how good it's going to look on telly. It's usually the journalism that comes first, and then you think about the storytelling after that.
Because if you think about the Panama Papers, it's an incredibly important subject, but essentially, if I was producing it now, what are the visuals? A USB drive, some bloke thumbing through a dossier of papers, a lady looking at a screen, scrolling through something. It's not exactly exciting. And a few shots of Belize beaches, of course. You know. But other than that, what else could you do?
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting because there's so many stories associated with technology now, and they all suffer from a similar challenge. Similarly, you're trying to think about social media and actually just shots of people watching phones. You know, they can't last that long. So, yeah, I think that's one of the challenges that we're facing.
If we can, let's walk through your career and start at the beginning. You know, what did you study at university? Did you always want to be a journalist? Was it television journalism that you wanted to do? Did you always want to be an editor? How ambitious were you?
I've always been really, really interested in the news. And I've always really, really loved watching television. And I think you have to really love watching television to work in it.
I'm still a news junkie now.
Yeah. So I think that being a news junkie was my starting point because it didn't feel like work, right? Just reading the papers or watching the evening news. And even as a teenager, I used to just watch an enormous amount of news every night without thinking that much about what that meant I wanted to do. I studied politics and worked in politics, actually, briefly, but then decided to go and study in America. And I studied journalism and politics there. And that coincided with a presidential election. And that's really where I got my break because I went to work for ITN as a kind of intern. And that's how I started at Channel 4 News then as well. I never set out to be an editor. I've always just tried to do whatever job I am doing at that time as well as I could. And
the best plan is to not actually have a plan.
Yeah. And I learnt a huge amount at Channel 4 News. You know, I started as an intern there and then became a producer and was a producer for many years there.
It's a great programme.
Yeah, it's a brilliant programme.
It could almost be on the BBC, it's that good. You know, it's a commitment to public service journalism with a couple of quick advert breaks in the middle.
Yeah, and a great, really fantastic team. And I learnt a huge amount from people like Jon Snow and Krishnan, and really just really, really enjoyed it. And I really enjoyed the kind of creativity of putting TV and live TV together, and took that obviously with me to Newsnight. And when I was at Newsnight, I did do, you know, a certain amount of investigations there. But Panorama is really a kind of next level in terms of investigative journalism, partly because it's so pure. When you're at somewhere like Newsnight or Channel 4, you have a mix of sort of reportage,
light and
shade, what happened that day. Yeah, you know, some arts, some culture. And whereas at Panorama, you're really focused on breaking a story. And that's an enormous challenge and an amazing privilege.
What was Newsnight like?
Late. It was on late. So it was quite tiring.
So did you have to literally take it to air and then you only went home after you came off air?
Yeah, and I thought, oh, well, it finishes about 11:30. So that's OK. That's not too late. But it's surprisingly difficult to switch off after you've been making live TV.
Because you've got all the adrenaline flowing around.
All the adrenaline, yeah. So it was really, I really enjoyed working on Newsnight. It's a brilliant format where you have, you know, you do three or four subjects over 40 minutes and you really have the depth. Daily News can't do that in the same way. And there, just so much happened while I was there, general elections and referendums, and it was an incredibly busy time politically.
Jeremy Paxman was the main presenter at this point, wasn't
yes,
he?
Yes, Jeremy was there when I arrived.
He's a legend.
And yeah, he's absolutely brilliant and brought a sort of forensic analysis to whatever subject or interview we did. And I learned a huge amount from him. He was great.
So, he was always respectful of his interviewees, but there was always what I would consider to be a healthy amount of cynicism. He wasn't there to ridicule or humiliate them, but he would say, "Come on, Minister."
Yeah, I think he would hold people to account, definitely. And I've actually, Jeremy's made a couple of panoramas as well for me since Newsnight, and he brings a great sort of, you know, he brings an argument and he brings a sort of strength of character to whatever story is he's covering, which is incredibly impressive.
I mean, you're in the editor's chair at the moment on Panorama, but there will be a time when your successor is appointed. What advice would you give to someone who aspires to be the next editor of Panorama? What qualities do they need to kind of succeed in the chair?
The reality is, in Panorama, I am just one of a really brilliant team. And supporting that team and guiding that team is a huge part of the job, actually. I think that you need to be quite clear-sighted about what you want to achieve and try and find some sort of carve out the subjects that are important to you and hit the really biggest stories. A certain amount, when you're sitting in the chair, it comes to you, if you see what I mean. And it's about how you respond and how you deal with that.
Stuff happens,
and a certain amount you drive. And I suppose depending on who you are is the balance of that.
What are the stressful aspects of the job?
I mean,
really, is it that bad?
It's difficult because
there's good stress and there's bad stress, isn't there? And I think my job has both. There's certain stressful things about my job that I actually enjoy, even in the moment. That gets the adrenaline going. And then there's other things where you're actually worried about things, or you're trying to reconcile conflicting priorities where it's difficult.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of characterising it, of good stress and bad stress. The kind of big picture stress is just doing the right thing by this programme, by Panorama. I think it's a really sort of vital programme. I think it...
You don't want to be the editor that cocks the job up.
You are looking after a legacy of 65 years, and I think about the people that have sort of grafted, the lawyers, the hours of meetings over that time to get it right and to earn our reputation. You know, it's hard fought. Every programme is hard fought on some level. And so the sort of big picture stress is you want to maintain the importance and the pride in that programme. The sort of low level stress is... So aside from getting it right week in, week out, the low-level stress is, you know, always thinking about what the audience are going to want to watch, what they're going to be interested in, you know, have you got the right mix of programmes? But usually I would characterise it as good stress, you know, big decisions.
You've got to get the judgment right as well. I mean, and that's another thing. It's almost an existential issue, and you could write a PhD on this, but how do you continue to innovate and therefore take real risks without obviously getting it wrong?
Well, I think there's different types of risk taking within Panorama. You do not take risks on facts. You do not broadcast hunches.
I would. That's why I'd only last about 3 weeks in the job.
There's just the team bring just an incredibly impressive rigour. They really do. Every line of the script, everything is carefully thought about and analysed. We get a lot of support from lawyers, and we get a lot of support from this department within the BBC that's called editorial policy. And just having those complicated editorial conversations about what can you say, what can't you say, what's balance, what's independence, what's straying over the line, where does our duty of care begin and end? All of those are areas where you don't want to take any risks. The kind of interesting risks or the innovations, I'd say, are more around the sort of subjects that you take on. So taking on subjects that are relevant to young people's lives, for example, like social media influencers or smartphone addiction. So that's where I think you can begin to find out, you know, where your audience is and what they're interested in. And the other risks are, you know, where how programs get to people. So saying we're going to really invest heavily in what we're doing on Facebook or what we're doing on YouTube. Those are sort of interesting areas to take risks around. But like truth and facts, there's no risk taking.
And is that how it works? Like some people don't want to watch the whole half an hour on BBC One, but they will watch a kind of 6 minute summary of it on YouTube.
Yeah, we do.
And I'd rather have that 6 minute attention than not at all.
Yeah, yeah. And for me, it's just people will come to Panorama and they'll hear about Panorama in lots of different ways. And we have an enormous amount of sort of brand recognition. But some people might have just heard about something we'd done on the news, or some people might have just seen the video that we put out on Facebook. And that's fine. I think it's about reaching people in whatever platforms they're using.
What about the risks to life and limb? You know, if you're doing a long-term deep undercover investigation at a detention centre, for example, I'm sure you'd have a willing reporter that wants to do it. But on the other hand, they could get stabbed in a prison fight. I mean, you've got to expose the wrongdoing and cover the story. But on the other hand, you can't mitigate the risk completely. Ultimately, there's going to be some danger there.
We think a huge amount about that and how to support the journalists that we work with. And in some cases, the subjects of our investigations. And, you know, it's always a balance. Really, what we want to do at Panorama is expose sort of systemic and institutional wrongdoing. And that there's always a balance there then with how long you stay on an undercover investigation or when you approach the subject of your investigation. But we are extremely proud of our record, I think I would say, and I don't want to talk about ongoing investigations, obviously, but we're extremely proud of our record in terms of safety and in terms of duty of care. And one of the things that's extraordinary about Panorama and the people who work on Panorama is how long those relationships last. You know, you stay in touch with the people that you have worked with, or people who've appeared on your programmes, often for years. So those relationships are real, and the impact of those programs are real. Similarly, it can last for years. We can have court cases, government reviews, and it's an important part of the responsibility of our program, I think, to stay across all of that.
If you were investigating me, I think one of the things I'd want to do is offer you a load of cash in a brown envelope. Have you ever kind of investigated a dodgy market trader who said, come on, love, you know, here's 500 quid, go away? Has there been any interesting anecdotes of attempts to bribe you beyond the standard lawyer's letter?
Not that I'd admit that to taking a bribe. And I've done my BBC anti-bribery course, of course. I haven't actually. It's not to say that there aren't attempts to influence.
To improperly influence.
To just, you know, yeah, improperly influence or influence in any way a program. But, you know, that's the easy stuff, if I'm honest. Like when somebody makes an effort to influence the program you're going to make, it's that's quite clear. You're independent. Of course, you're not going to be influenced by them. But you only get to that point once you've got a lot of evidence, I suppose.
Rachel, it's been a hugely interesting conversation. I've been looking forward to having you on the podcast for so long. I'm a massive fan of Panorama. Please keep up the great work and thank you for your time.
Thanks so much for having me.
A Right Angles podcast in association with Big Things Media.